So let's start with this because, all right, I think we would mostly agree if you're a hockey fan, you know that was kind of a throwaway game. The Leafs are shorthanded. They have Michael Hutchinson in that. And straight up, they didn't have it that night. And that's expected over the course of a regular season where a team just does not have jump, as Matthew said in the post game, and a desperate team gets the best of you. Okay, fine. No wide sweeping takes about the team. But Tavares gets put up on the top line, and it doesn't work out. In fact, it's the first time the line looks that bad all season. And so, yeah, narratives are going to happen, man. And I'm sure that you have done the same thing I have, which is solicit the opinions of people as to what is going on with Tavares this year, what's up with him and Nylander, and do you think has there been anything revealing to you behind the scenes about either their partnership or Tavares' play this season?
I honestly don't get why this is a thing. I mean, myself, like, to me, John Tavares is playing the best defense he's played since he's been a Leaf. You know, so much of the narrative around the team, you know, in his previous 2 years is, you know, that they're too leaky, they gave up too much. You know, I look, I'm not saying it's gone swimmingly. They've had about six different, you know, third line mates on that second line with him and Nylander. And you know, obviously the 5-on-5 offense has not been what you'd hope for. But, you know, here you have the captain of the team producing roughly a point a game and making some pretty sizable leaps in his defensive contribution to what's going on. You know, I understand everyone wants to jump to the contract and all that. Like, it's fair, but I don't see it as being maybe the issue everyone else does. And you know, quite honestly, last night, I liked that comment from Austin. You know, I think you're rightly highlighting that he's trying to pick him up, and he's you know, I just think it's a good teammate thing to do. And, you know, I actually didn't think, you know, I don't know what was going on. If that was a night where we could actually speak to the players, not on a Zoom call, I would have asked, like, was the ice an issue or what? Like, I haven't seen Matthews mishandle the puck as much as he did last night in a long time. And now it might be just that his own legs and mind weren't as sharp as they need to be, you know, six games in 9 days, all that stuff. I'm certainly not criticizing him, but they just, you know, there's like five or six times where he normally just corrals the puck and he was bobbling it. I mean, it just was not a sharp game. So, you know, I'm not going to say that line didn't work because of Tavares. And I actually don't think, I think we're overstating a little bit, you know, his negative impact this year.
Okay, and that's fair, and it's something that we've raised too, which is the idea of, well, you can look at these possession numbers or these like shot numbers, and they're down, right? That's part of it, mm-hmm. where you look at it and say, Tavares has not been the player he's been normally at 5-on-5 throughout his career. If your contention is that he's focusing more defensively and taking on an added burden, I think that's a point that's worth raising and one that's probably overlooked. We've said that, hey, man, Austin Matthews, with the year that he's had, it's made the gap between the two of them larger than it's ever been, which I think is also part of the narrative, is that people look at Matthews dominating this way and they say, well, isn't it supposed to be a 1-2 punch? And you go, well, not quite, because that guy is just punching way harder than anybody that's not named McKinnon or McDavid in the entire NHL. So, like, there's a whole, his shooting percentage is down. And then there's another thing, which is his partnership with Nylander. And a lot of people believe that the playing styles of the two guys do not mesh very well together. And I thought that last night, breaking the two of them up was noticeable, especially coming off of, like, a pretty recent benching of Nylander. What do you think the long-term future is there? Do you believe that they're going to still get an extended run together, or that Sheldon Keefe might try what he did last night, which is having the two separated and hope that Nylander can drive his own line?
I think you're going to see them separate. I mean, so much of this is going to be predicated on the injury situation. You know, I don't know how long we're looking at Hyman out, Thornton out. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's long-term, but, you know, who knows? It's a strange year. But I would think if a world exists where everyone's healthy, maybe you're trying them apart. You know, I actually thought that Barabanov, Nylander, Kerfoot line had some jump nice last night. I thought they were one of the few that there was times they were on the ice and they had some good prolonged ozone shifts and looked dangerous and speedy. And I thought the Flames had some trouble with them. You know, I won't overreact to that. But it was interesting that it kind of worked. And I think you're right to reach the conclusion that, you know, look, Nylander and Tavares actually had produced good numbers last year together. And for whatever reason, I don't know if it's gone stale, just something isn't clicking there, you know, what have you. You know, I've sensed some frustration from both guys. Not necessarily at each other to suggest that, but, you know, Nylander's mentioned a few times that, you know, it's been hard to generate long offensive zone shifts. And, he, you know, he, he senses that his shots are down. He wants to get producing more offense. And so, you know, I don't know what the answer is, because, you know, at the end of the day, we come back to the fact, I think, that, you know, the best way to spread offense through the lineup would be to split up Matthews and Marner. But to split up Matthews and Marner the way they've produced the start this year would be the definition of madness. So, you know, I think this is probably, if we get back to the root of it, why there's been talk of the Leafs looking to add another forward at some point as we get closer to the trade deadline, because, you know, they just maybe are missing a little bit of depth. I mean, it seems to me that in a healthy lineup, you know, Sheldon Keefe sees Zach Hyman as a third liner on the team. He's played above that, obviously, and then the lines have performed well, especially when he was on that top line. But, you know, I think that there's just not maybe quite the right mix to have two elite lines right now, and that's what you expect when you have the players the Leafs do.
No, I understand your point with Tavares, and it's a well-made one. And again, the hockey reference page doesn't look so bad. I just wonder if the head coach's actions are jibing with that, right? Like, he is down pretty significantly in minutes. He's trying to put him in sheltered roles. I mean, even with Nylander, they were getting a lot of offensive zone starts. He puts him on the top line with Matthews and Marner. What do you make of the way that Sheldon Keefe has treated his $11 million player?
Well, I think it's a direct byproduct of the fact he's running the pants off of Matthews and Marner. I mean, you know, those guys are playing among the most minutes for forwards in the entire league. And so minutes become a zero-sum game. You know, that there's if one set of group is on the ice and the others aren't. And so, you know, he's prioritized that line, but it's probably the smartest use of his resources. I mean, Matthews is 7 years younger than Tavares. He's in the prime of his offensive career. You know, we're seeing him and Marner basically turnstile the entire North Division so far this season. And, you know, I think that's where we have to remove Tavares' salary from the discussion and try to view what's best in the context of the team. And if you have a top line that's playing that much and producing that much, you know, I think you're asking something different of the second line. It's not to say those guys are completely excused from producing points and offense, but, you know, I think that the indication to me is that you're looking to at least break even in those minutes, and you're expecting the top guys to win you games. And, you know, the Leafs have won 14 out of 20 to start the year. So,
yeah.
You know, I understand why the conversation exists. And look, it's not going anywhere. I mean, Tavares still has 4 years left on his contract. Beyond this one, I would expect his production will decline over those years, as they would for most players. And, you know, maybe eventually we're talking about him moving to the wing and all those stuff. I mean, it's a valid conversation because he's paid among the top players in the league. But, you know, I think that it's been somewhat overstated in certain corners about how much of a problem this is at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a problem at the moment, and I'm not even really sure that's the point. I think what it is that we're looking at this and saying, hey, we've seen the Maple Leafs against every team in the division now, and we've seen it a bunch. It's pretty clear that when they're healthy, when they're not diminished to this degree, that they're the best team. Like you mentioned it, they won 14 out of 20, and none of it feels fluky. It feels pretty clear that there's a gap between them and the next team. So it's, hey, when they get in the playoffs, A, will their style match up against somebody that's unfortunate, and all the stuff that's like cliche almost going into these things about hot goalie aside, what happens if you get to that next level? Because it's feeling very, very realistic that they get out of the North Division and then they end up playing some other teams. And that's where people start to point to the question marks of, well, how are you going to win a Stanley Cup? And frankly, I don't think that you can win a Stanley Cup as a one-line team. And that the whole basis of the organizational philosophy when it comes to the way they've been built has been that you're going to get dominance from your top two lines. That you're going to have arguably the best combination of two lines in hockey. And like, I just think we would agree that while Tavares has been fine, and while I don't think Nylander is as big of a problem as he gets made out to be by some people, and it's just that somewhere in the middle here, people are looking at it saying, hey, if these guys are this moving into a playoff series against a Lightning or a Bruins or a Avalanche, luckily enough, this probably is not going to be enough from those players. Would you at least agree with that?
I would, but the one counterpoint I'll make is that Tampa won the Stanley Cup in September with a one-line team offensively. I mean, they got lots of other good players, but if you look at the goal scoring, I mean, Kucherov and Point did almost all the scoring for that team. I mean, as much as everyone talked about Coleman and Goodrow and Yanni Gord as a good third line for them, I mean, they produced next to zero offense over 20-odd games during that playoff run. I think if your stars are good enough, you can get through. You know, I'm not saying the Leafs by any means want to do that. I mean, obviously, Tavares was signed with the idea of creating, I think, two elite lines, you know, two lines that basically you're forcing the other team to choose and all that sort of thing. I mean, they're not in that position right now, which is, you know, maybe why the answer is staring us in the face. I mean, maybe over time here, the answer is breaking up Marner and Matthews, you know, not because you want to or because there's anything there, but that might be the only way to achieve two elite lines. That because, you know, there was a time, especially Tavares' first year here, where, you know, he and Marner really clicked. I mean, Marner's vision and his ability to finish around the net, you know, produced, I think, 47 goals or something in that neighborhood for John. So, you know, maybe that's the answer. But so far, Sheldon Keefe really hasn't done that. I mean, for a huge percentage of the minutes they've both been healthy this year, they have 5-on-5, they played together. But, you know, that might be where we're headed here. I just don't think he's trying to find another solution before getting to that.
Yeah, and I hope they find one, because I'm just really enjoying this Matthews-Marner partnership, and I have a couple of different reasons. I'm like, yeah, you don't want to mess with when you have something going like that, and also, we said it yesterday, man, I think 50 and 50 matters, and I don't think that Matthews can get it without Marner, so I hope that ends up staying a thing. So a couple of other things.
Do you know what's interesting, though, before we move on? Yeah, you know, one thing, sure, Sheldon mentioned post-game, you know, that might have got lost, is that the reason he put Tavares with them is because he didn't like any of the other options, but he didn't want to break up Matthews and Marner. So, you know, it's so far been his personal preference to keep them together. And, you know, he at least framed it as though it wasn't about getting Tavares going, but it was about there was no one else to put there and that he felt. And, you know, he thought it would work better.
There was Spezza. I still don't understand the reluctance to give Spezza some cookies. Like, he's been great all year. He's younger than Thornton. And I just thought, hey, this is actually sort of a seamless fit here. I was actually surprised. I thought the Spezza thing was so obvious that when I said it on the show yesterday when they were announcing the lines that it was going to be boring. And then they didn't do it, and they kept Spezza down on the fourth line. I was a little surprised by that. Okay, so...
Me too.
We
agree for once.
Okay, good. I like when we agree. It makes me feel smart. Two other things. One, Kerfoot. Do you think his primary role moving forward is that he's a winger?
I think ideally that's what they want. You know, look, I think he's better suited personally as a winger than as a third-line center. He's such a good skater. I mean, this guy's got tools, but he's not as big. And, you know, if we're going off sort of prototypical ideas of a third-line center, I don't think he fits the bill. But, you know, I'm not convinced that Pierre Engvall will last in the role where he is right now. And I'm also not convinced they can go out and get that player via trade. So, you know, I think ideally he's a winger, but you know, maybe out of necessity, we see him return to being their third line center. And, you know, man, as much as we might fixate on sort of a winger to play on the second line, I really think if they could make the addition that it's probably worth giving up assets or whatever it's going to cost to address the third line center position, because then it frees up Kerfoot as a winger. And, you know, I think he's been low key a positive story these last few weeks. I think he's played well, and he looks, every line that he goes to seems to get a little bit better. And so I don't know if that's coincidence or if he's driving it, but he seems better suited in the role on the wing.
Yeah, I think he's a good winger and a bad center. Like, that's just the way it is sometimes with guys. And, yeah, I like him with Tavares. And the two of those guys seem to work together. They seem to have some chemistry together. And, yeah, I think Engvall has played well, actually, the last couple of games. He's sort of popped. And that's why I'm hoping that Kyle Dubas is just working the trade. He's working the phone lines. Like, oh, you guys see Engvall these last couple of games? Couple good chances here. You may, yeah, this guy, I think he's popping. I think you're buying at the right time. Engvall stock is moving
on up.
He has a goal
not on David Ayers, too,
yeah,
right?
That's
like, how
right.
about that?
Yeah. Hey, how about the Engvall play as of late, huh? Can I interest you in some Engvall? So the other one that I have is, so Lehtinen jumps into the lineup last night, and I actually think he's good, but there is no place for him, right? I don't think that he should be jumping over anyone. Dermott's been great. When Muzzin's healthy, obviously he's not taking his spot, and Riley, there's been some dialogue on his play as of late, but obviously he's not jumping into the lineup for Morgan Riley. Is Lehtinen okay with this role? Because when he first came over to the Leafs, the buzz was this guy's going to play and that they're super high on him, and now he can't crack the lineup unless there's an injury.
You know, I don't know how happy he is with it. I mean, obviously he doesn't love it, because remember, he's arrived here as a free agent too. I mean, he had other options. And so maybe, you know, I don't really have a good feel, but I mean, I think it's fair to guess that he's probably not pleased that essentially he's the seventh D-man on the team. But that being said, injuries are probably, as much as we don't want to factor them in for any team, that they're probably going to continue to happen. As long as he's number seven, he's going to play at some point. And look, he has a limited amount of leverage, but he's on a one-year deal. And so he's a free agent again, you know, coming up this summer. So, you know, I think he's probably fine in the big picture. I'm sure he's not happy, but I think he can live with it because, you know, he gets to choose again very soon, you know, if he doesn't like the way the season goes in Toronto. And so I don't see it becoming a distraction or an issue. But, you know, had Sandin been healthy, you know, it looks like he's out, I think, 6 to 8 weeks or somewhere in that yeah. time frame. I mean, if he was healthy and kind of pushing from behind, you know, then you might have saw Lehtinen move, you know, before this deadline. But I think right now they'll just hang tight with him, and he's got to live through the ups and downs of his position on the team.
So Benny was concerned off the top of the show about Keith's comments when it came to Freddie Anderson. Do you have any clarity as to what's going on there? Like, is there a reason for even you to be concerned?
Yeah, it was ominous. You know, I don't know what's going to happen from here or something to that. Something to that effect was, you know, that catches my eye, especially because, look, Frederick Anderson was on the ice yesterday morning with the team at the skate. It was an extremely short morning skate, but there was no hint really that anything was wrong or that he wouldn't be the starter that night. You know, Keith was asked yesterday morning for lineup changes. He didn't mention Frederick Anderson. And then all of a sudden, you know, Michael Hutchinson's in goal for the game. And, you know, I think that the worry, it's not really about the short term, you know, with Frederick Anderson. If he just needs a couple games and that's all it is, sort of body maintenance type of issue, you know, I don't think that that's cause for huge alarm, especially with Jack Campbell on his way back here in the next few days, seemingly. But, you know, if this is a sign that he's breaking down, you know, he's played the most minutes in the league, he's faced the second most shots of any NHL goaltender. And I think for the most part, I mean, there's been a few clunker games, but for the most part, I think he's bounced back from last year. You know, that is concern. You know, Jack Campbell hasn't had still very much NHL experience. He's played well in limited action for the Leafs. I think Michael Hutchinson, we know what he is. He's a depth goaltender for pretty much any organization at this point, but you wouldn't, you know, Colorado had to play him in the playoffs because they had two injuries above him, but, you know, you would never go into a situation where you want to do that. And so, yeah, I think Frederick Anderson's health should be a huge question mark going forward and a point of concern until he gets the all clear. And, you know, for all I know, he'll be on the ice today at practice. But the way Sheldon Keefe approached that yesterday and the way everything went down, you know, makes me wonder, you know, what's going on with him. And, you know, is this a short-term thing or is there something more at play here?
Yeah, could not be more ominous. I don't know what's going to happen from here. Okay, that seems...
right, I mean, it might just be honest, though, too. Like, it might be that he hadn't... You know, maybe we're reading into two... Like, he's just saying, like, literally, he hasn't received a medical update, but...
Yes.
You know, the way it all happened to me is what raises the alarm. It's that he looked to be the starter. They didn't say anything in the morning about, you know, they told us about all the other lineup changes, didn't mention him, and then after the game, I don't know what happens from here. Yeah, it doesn't seem like all is well.
Yeah, that's not good too, because Ben was making the point earlier that if you have no Freddie Anderson and if you have Michael Hutchinson, that's not as good for the Leafs. So that was his big, you know, leading take from the show today.
No, Dumbo, so it's that the lead of 10 points and running away with the division that you get the Oilers coming in on the weekend, that it's only 6 points now, and if Hutchinson even has to play a couple of games, it could be interesting. Yeah. Anyways, the other guys that are out, Hyman and Thornton. Oh God, you're such an idiot. and Muzzin with the
hey CJ, good goalie, good, bad goalie, bad. That's what you. If you listen to our show, you got that take today.
Jake Muzzin has a broken
face. It's a good
show. Yeah, and listen, you don't need a fully healthy face to play hockey, I don't think. But yeah, is it day to day with those guys? Do you have any update on the guys that missed the game yesterday?
No, except that, you know, Thornton was at least a possibility yesterday. So, you know, he took a couple big checks in Montreal, and obviously he's coming back from a rib injury. So, you know, I think it's fair to say he's likely just dealing with a pain issue rather than something worse. So, you know, I think, you know, I do expect to see him sooner than later. You know, what's interesting about Muzzin, because we know how tough the guy is that, you know, Keith kind of alluded to the fact we should expect to see him soon. Just playing with a full face shield and a broken bone in his face. So, you know, that's probably the most important news of all. I mean, obviously the offense didn't click without the wingers being down yesterday, but, you know, I think for the Leafs, big picture, I mean, Muzzin's their most important defensive defenseman, and then shut down, you know, key member of the shutdown pair. So, you know, the quicker they get him back in, I think the better.